Top stories. North Korea says it has successfully test-fired a hypersonic missile, the second such launch in less than a week. Calls are growing in the U.S. for the closure of the Guantanamo Bay prison on the 20th anniversary of the opening of the infamous detention center. And COVID infections hit a new high in France amid a fresh surge in cases across Europe, driven by the Omicron variant. Those were the top stories. Welcome. North Korea says the projectile it test-fired early Tuesday was a hypersonic missile. Pyongyang says the test verified the maneuverability of the missile, which hit its designated target 1,000 kilometers away on the sea. The missile is said to have reached its top speed of Mach 10 or 10 times the speed of sound. It was the first launch in over a year to be witnessed by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. The launch was the second in less than a week, signaling the country's drive to modernize its military. Pyongyang insists that such tests are in self-defense in the face of Washington's hostile policies, sanctions, and joint military drills with South Korea. Correspondent in Seoul, Jennifer Chang, joined us earlier with a closer look at why North Korea's latest missile test is important.
That puts North Korea in an extremely exclusive club, but it has to be in such a club because it has to worry that the U.S. is going to do a preemptive strike on its nuclear weapons and missile development facilities. So that is why North Korea is doing this third hypersonic missile test that it did yesterday. Now, also, the South Korean conservative presidential candidate said yesterday that he is willing to do a preemptive strike on North Korean missile and nuclear facilities. That means that the U.S. and South Korea would be doing such a preemptive strike on North Korea together. And South Korea has been working on developing maneuverable reentry vehicles, which are vehicles that can evade missile defenses to a certain extent, not like hypersonic missiles, which can actually flatten out, move up, and then dive onto a target. Not as powerful as that, but the South Koreans are also interested in this type of technology, maneuverable warheads or payloads that can come off of missiles and evade missile defenses. If these gliding vehicles or maneuverable vehicles are mated with a nuclear weapon, that poses a real game changer.
Calls are growing for the United States to permanently close its notorious Guantanamo Bay prison. Democratic lawmaker Ilhan Omar says Washington used Guantanamo to systematically torture scores of prisoners and deprive them of their humanity. She says the United States, by operating Gitmo, traded away decency and the rule of law for indefinite detention. According to Omar, no one has faced serious charges for the crimes against humanity committed in the center. Adam Schiff, another Democratic representative, says the commission process at the facility was long proved unworkable. He notes the moral and other costs of maintaining the center are too high. The detention camp was opened 20 years ago.
The U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba is back in the spotlight as the notorious facility marks its 20th anniversary. The facility was established under an order by then U.S. President George W. Bush as part of his so-called war on terror that he waged in the wake of the September 11 attacks in 2001. The order authorized the U.S. military to hold foreign nationals in custody without charge indefinitely and prevent them from legally challenging their detention on alleged terrorism charges. The Guantanamo was chosen because it is located in Cuba, not on U.S. soil, and prisoners held there are not eligible for habeas corpus, a fundamental right that protects against unlawful and indefinite detention. Over the past two decades, at least 780 people, the majority of them men captured by the U.S. and its allies, have passed through the facility. Some 730 of them have been transferred elsewhere under a program known as Extraordinary Rendition, which is the transfer without legal process of a detainee to the custody of a foreign government for purposes of detention and interrogation. Nearly 40 inmates still remain there, while an unspecified number lost their lives in due course, mostly as a result of torture. The US has time and again come under fire for widespread violation of human rights, including torture such as waterboarding, sensory deprivation, stress positions, inhumane interrogation techniques, solitary confinement, secret transfers, forced feeding of hunger strikers, and enforced disappearances, and many more. The US has so far resisted calls from human rights activists and international bodies for the closure of the god-awful compound. Recently, a group of UN human rights experts have voiced outrage at the detention camp, calling it an ugly chapter of unrelenting human rights violations. They have described the facility as a site of unparalleled notoriety and a stain on Washington's stated commitment to the rule of law. They urge the US to close the site, return the detainees home or to safe third countries, and provide remedy and reparation for those tortured and held arbitrarily. US President Joe Biden, like his predecessor Barack Obama, had pledged to close the facility. But he seems to be taking a U-turn on the promise, as the facility will be expanded further with a new courtroom worth $4 million to be built later this year. The United States' actions violate its obligations under the Third Geneva Convention. The UN rights body in the past also spoke out against Washington's failure to close the facility as a clear breach of international law. As fears continue to grow over an impending human tragedy in the notorious jail, the international community must also be held accountable for its failure to take concrete actions against a country that claims to be the defender of human rights.
The U.S. president calls on the Senate to pass voting rights legislation stalled in Congress. Joe Biden says the Senate is now, quote, a shell of its former self, is endorsing changes to the Senate's rules to push the bills. The president says the filibuster rules, which allow a minority of senators to block legislation, should be transformed if necessary. The issue of voting rights has been a heated debate in the United States for months. Several states have tightened voting rules following Biden's election victory. Critics believe the new rules make it harder for minorities to cast their ballots and thus subvert democracy. COVID infections hit a new high in France amid a fresh surge in cases across Europe, mainly fueled by the highly contagious Omicron variant. French officials reported nearly 370,000 new infections, the country's highest single-day caseload so far. Meanwhile, hundreds of health workers took to the streets of Paris to call for better working conditions. They demanded new hires and higher wages, among other things. In Italy, new cases more than doubled compared to the previous day, to top 220,000. Italian officials also logged nearly 300 more deaths. The World Health Organization says the Omicron variant, the Omicron COVID-19 variant, is becoming dominant in Europe.
Today, the Omicron variant represents a new west-to-east tidal wave sweeping across the region on top of the Delta surge that all countries were managing until late 2021. At this rate, the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation forecasts that more than 50% of the population in the region will be infected with Omicron in the next 6 to 8 weeks.
The WHO's regional director for Europe underlined that Omicron is highly transmissible based on new data collected in recent weeks. However, he expressed optimism that the approved vaccines still provide good protection against the new variant. The remarks come as Britain has reported a drop in daily infections, logging over 120,000 new cases. Europe on the whole, however, has been at the epicenter of the new outbreak, with many countries reporting a record number of infections. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is facing fresh scrutiny over rule-breaking gatherings in government offices. The latest revelations show his Downing Street residence hosted a garden party at the height of the 2020 COVID lockdown. Johnson's government is being grilled by the opposition Labour Party in Parliament. The Prime Minister himself is absent from the comments, but a Cabinet Office Minister took the question. Michael Ellis apologized for the controversy surrounding the allegations. In response to calls for the MP's potential resignation, he said, however, that Johnson retains people's confidence and is going nowhere. The PM office says it will not respond to the alleged gathering until an inquiry by a government official is over. Sue Gray is investigating allegations of at least five parties held at different government departments during lockdown restrictions in 2020.
Everyone endured some very, very tough restrictions impacting on family life and mental health, so I can entirely understand people's anger and upset about this, which is why I think it's absolutely right that the Prime Minister moved swiftly to commission that independent inquiry by Ms. Gray.
Johnson has been under fire after a video emerged last month showing his staff laughing and joking about a Downing Street party during a 2020 Christmas lockdown. On Monday, British broadcaster ITV published an email sent by one of Johnson's top aides inviting over 100 employees at a party that year, to a party, I should say. Around 40 staff gathered in the Downing Street garden, including Johnson and his wife. At the time, lockdown restrictions banned more than two people from meeting outdoors. Johnson has also faced criticism on other fronts in recent months. Those include his handling of a sleaze scandal, the awarding of lucrative COVID contracts, and the refurbishment of his Downing Street flat. In other news now, Russia says its first round of talks with the United States over the Ukraine crisis have provided no ground for optimism.
We see no real reason to be optimistic so far. The first round of the talks was positive and held in an open, substantive, and direct manner. But the purpose of this negotiation process is not the process itself, so it cannot satisfy us. The talks result is significant, but nothing can be said about the result yet.
Peskov says the situation will be cleared after more rounds of talks. Russian and American diplomats sat down for security talks in Geneva on Monday. Russia is set to hold further talks with NATO and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe later on this week. Peskov says Russia is not setting any deadlines for meetings, but does not want the process to drag on indefinitely. Moscow has demanded that the U.S.-led NATO rule out admitting Ukraine as a member and stop the alliance's eastward expansion. The U.S. rejects those demands. It says progress in the talks depends on de-escalation from Moscow. The U.S. and NATO accuse Russia of planning to invade Ukraine, but Russia denies, saying its military buildup on the border is solely defensive. France says Iran and the P4 plus one group of countries are still far from any agreement to revive the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. The French foreign minister said the negotiations are ongoing. He said the slow pace of the talks, however, jeopardizes the chance of finding a solution that respects the interests of all sides. Jean-Yves Le Drian added that bits of progress were made at the end of December, but we are still far from concluding this negotiation. This comes as Iran and the remaining parties to the JCPOA continue their eighth round of talks in the Austrian capital. Iran says the negotiations must produce a lasting and reliable agreement. Earlier, we were joined by our Vienna correspondent, Homa Lesgi, who updated us on the talks. Take a listen.
Today, we had the news of Mr. Bagheri Kani, the head of Iran's delegation, in yet another meeting with the EU coordinator, Enrico Mora. These meetings have become regular now, since the eighth round began, and he was expecting, as you said, to meet also representatives of the three European signatories of the JCPOA, Britain, France and Germany. Yesterday he also had meetings with Russia and China, and also the Russian side, Mr. Mikhail Olyanov, had a separate meeting himself with the U.S. team led by Rob Malley, the U.S. Special Representative on Iran. And the Russian ambassador after that meeting said that the meeting with the Americans was guided by the unity of purpose, he said, which is for all the sides, the restoration of the JCPOA, the agreement reached in 2015. And he said that he found the meeting and the approaches being taken as very pragmatic. At the same time, yesterday, after his meeting with Mr. Bagheri Kani, the Chinese ambassador said that he believes the Iranians have been very, quote, constructive in coming up with detailed or increasingly detailed ideas, and he believes that they're taking a very good approach. Now, when we're talking about the ideas that have been put forward by Iran, we are talking about the demands that the Iranians have made. on verification and guarantees. And these are proving to be some of the tricky issues or more complex issues that need further technical and legal discussions in order to be included in the final document that will form the restored JCPOA, if indeed that happens. Also, sources close to the Iranian team have told me just earlier today that the negotiations are ongoing in various formats at the expert level, at the level of heads of delegations, bilaterals and multilaterals, with the aim of reducing the current differences and narrowing down the gaps and differences. But they have also warned, and I'm quoting here, about some efforts to revise the current understandings or the understandings reached up until this stage in these talks, and they are introducing new demands.
An appeals court in Saudi Arabia upholds the death sentence of two Bahraini men. Jafar Sultan and Sadiq Sa'amar were sentenced for allegedly attempting to explode a Saudi-Bahraini border crossing in 2015. Both defendants reject the allegations as politically motivated. Riyadh is criticized for handing death sentences to convicts without a fair trial. Many of the prisoners executed in the kingdom over the past few years were allegedly tortured and forced into confessions, that is. According to rights groups, Saudi Arabia ramped up its executions in 2021 in comparison with the previous year. All that aloof from me.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Washington's terrorism around the world has to be decisively confronted in order to safeguard the stability, security, and independence of countries, especially in view of the tensions the United States has deliberately kicked up with China over the breakaway island of Taiwan and the fierce trade war. The United States is the number one enemy of the Islamic world and the destroyer-in-chief of independent world nations. Therefore, it should not be allowed to set foot in Kazakhstan or, for that matter, in any other Central Asian country, where it is scheming to install client regimes similar to what it has done in several Arab states. Dear listeners, what you heard was part of an article written by the staff of Kayhan International. This article is published under the heading U.S. Behind Kazakhstan's Sedition. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. The abortive U.S. bid to meddle in Kazakhstan has led to the death of around 200 people, including protesters incited by Western media broadcasts to disturb public order and indulge in acts of violence. This situation has apparently been controlled by the Kazakh authorities with the help from Russia, which sent a multinational peacekeeping force to stop the chaos and restore order. Moscow's move is meant to prevent the United States and some of its West European accomplices from establishing a foothold in what Kremlin leaders have historically viewed as not only their exclusive sphere of influence, but as Russia's underbelly. The presence of Russia and Kazakhstan, Vladimir Putin and Nursultan Nazarbayev emphasized the importance of cooperation between the two countries and vigilance against American meddling, which is all the more evident in Ukraine, where it has reached dangerous levels that might lead to war. Washington's terrorism around the world has to be decisively confronted in order to safeguard the stability, security, and independence of countries, especially in view of the tensions the United States has deliberately kicked up with China over the breakaway island of Taiwan and the fierce trade war. As the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and the European Union have virtually annexed the former Soviet satellites in Eastern Europe, the U.S. is trying to infiltrate Central Asia. The landlocked Central Asian countries, which are Muslim states, have several treaties with former overlord Moscow, numerous multilateral treaties such as the Commonwealth of Independent States, CIS, Central Treaty Security Organization, CSTO, and Eurasian Economic Union, EAEU. By invoking these treaties, Kazakhstan, the world's largest landlocked country, the world's largest Muslim-majority country in terms of area, and the world's ninth-largest country, has invited Russia to send a multinational peacekeeping force to restore public order. The Kazakhs, who are a proud Turkic Muslim people with historical ties to Iran and the Muslim world, ought to be aware of the devilish designs of the Americans. The United States is the number one enemy of the Islamic world and the destroyer-in-chief of independent world nations. Therefore, it should not be allowed to set foot in Kazakhstan or, for that matter, in any other Central Asian country where it is scheming to install client regimes, similar to what has done in several Arab states.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and today we present you a famous statement by Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, on the merits of his daughter, the noblest lady of all times, as that Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her. The statement reads, Fatima is a part of me. Whoever hurts her has hurt me, and whoever hurts me displeases God. Thank you.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
سيد عبد الله الموسوي.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human justice from the perspective of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam. Human rights in general from his perspective. One of the things that Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi had to face was poverty of his time. And obviously, not just his time, but he wanted to pass the message to generations to come until the Day of Judgment. Imam Ali alayhi salam, he looked at the world intently. He looked at every aspect of it, without any exception, of course. He kept the individuals as well as the collective rights of the people in mind and did not ignore anything, which is quite a rigorous task to do, that when you want to solve a problem as big as poverty, you need to look at every possible way to eradicate such a problem, keeping, of course, the rights of individuals and people in mind. A task that many organizations today, with billions of dollars behind their backs and government behind their backs, is trying to eradicate poverty, and they are failing miserably. Why? Because they are looking at things with one eye, from one scope. They're not taking every possible opportunities, and even if they manage to find a way, they will end up stepping on other people's right. So in order for me to, I don't know, do something for humanity, for example, I'm trying to cure a disease, what these people do, this organization, they go to Africa and they test their vaccines on human beings. They turn them into lab rats, which means they put their lives in danger. Now, this is exactly what Amir al-Mu'mineen did not do. He looked at every possible way, keeping in mind that no one should be hurt in the process. He invited the people to look at the beauty of the world and the wonders of creation. At the same time, informed the individuals as well as the society of their rights, so they might acquire the greatest bliss and prosperity. It is always self-reform for Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. He had to begin from within. He explained the rights of the individuals, the rights of society, so that the individuals should help one another by mutual cooperation and endeavor for the prosperity of the society and the benefit for all people if they collectively work together. This is exactly how he tried to achieve poverty. And this is the only way you can achieve it, is when you and I cooperate together to help one another. As long as I'm only thinking of myself, thinking of my wealth, collecting for myself, I'm going to be poor. Now it says that Elon Musk, 3% of his wealth, will eradicate world hunger. One man only. 3% of his wealth, not all of it, would eradicate hunger itself. Do we see them doing it? Of course not. Let us take a break and then we come back right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Man himself is composed of three things. Obviously, a body, a spirit, and sentiments, if we can say the least. Body is a material part of man. It also enjoys right which must be respected. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayh, whose efforts were centered on the enforcement of the self and good morals, also endeavored to lay the foundation of society on equity and justice, and to enact justice law for the material and worldly life of man. He tried to create that balance, that yes, we do understand that you have a body, and the body is material in its nature, and it requires material matter. But should we let it loose? Should I let myself indulge in anything I desire? If I desire wealth, should I go and get as greedy as I can, even if it means many people will get, you know, hurt in the process, as we see in Africa, for example, the blood diamond? Or no? Or should I, you know, control myself? If I say, no, I need to control myself, where do I begin? And this is exactly what Amir al-Mu'mineen tapped on. The spiritual aspect of man that needs, if that is cultivated, if that's being taught correctly, it should put a leash on the desire of oneself. So he created this kind of reformation from within. It was also the object of Imam Ali alayhi salam to guide people to the purity of heart and the acquisition of good conduct, and to nurture and train the conscience in such a way that they might shun bad habits of their own accord without being forced, and adorn themselves with good qualities. This was the, you know, as simple as we could make it, was the mission of Amir al-Mu'mineen, to make sure that I get rid of all vices and replace them with virtues. If I have these virtues, then I would learn not to harm another human being. I learn to cooperate with other people. I learn to help other people and feed them and give them from what I have. I share with them. This act itself, it should and it will eradicate poverty if we collectively work towards this aim. If we collectively have this idea, this mentality in our mind, the mentality that Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi tried so hard to achieve. However, it is not possible to develop good habits until one has food to eat and dress to wear, and the people cannot acquire means of livelihood until justice is prevailed, which is another issue that we will face in trying to seek virtues. If I'm hungry, good luck to my virtues. Let us continue this topic in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد
محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله صل على محمد وآله صل على محمد وآله صل على محمد وآله.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Thirty-three lucky green sea turtles get a new lease on life in Indonesia. The turtles were released into the sea off the coast of the island of Bali. Tourists and locals gathered to watch the endangered animals get their way back to the wild. Authorities rescued the reptiles from poachers late last year. The population of green sea turtles has fell sharply in recent years due to excessive hunting and the loss of nesting sites. In Chile, three Andean condors are back in the wild after years of rehab at a rescue center. The vulnerable vultures were released near the Chilean capital, Santiago. Scientists will continue to monitor the birds to make sure they are healthy. Andean condors occupy a special place in Chile. They are, in fact, the country's national bird and a symbol of power and health. The vultures are one of the biggest flight-capable birds in the world, with a wingspan of up to 3.2 meters. Conservationists in several countries are trying to shore up their population.
In Germany, tasty bits of crumbs are all it takes for hundreds of sheep and goats to participate in the campaign to encourage vaccination against COVID-19. 700 farm animals were arranged into a 100-meter-long syringe in a pasture south of Hamburg. The shepherd says she spent several days practicing the herd. The sheep and goats were lured by pieces of bread, which they quickly gobbled up after being released into the field. Helping the shepherd was an organizer who works with a flock to run team training exercises for companies. He says they wanted to do something to grab people's attention and encourage them to get COVID jabs.
Well, if I were to just write it on Facebook, nobody would notice it. And my job is to have company teams leading some thousand sheep from A to B, and I have noticed how enthusiastically the sheep are received, and that it simply reaches people deep inside, which is perhaps not possible rationally, with rational arguments.
Etzold says sheep bring out the soft side of people and hopes that this will help convey the message. So far, the campaign has received a positive response, with videos of the sheep arrangement going viral. Official data shows Germany has the lowest inoculation rate among Western European nations. This is mainly attributed to vaccination hesitancy, as well as a small percentage who vehemently oppose getting the jab. Technological change is accelerating today, with robots and artificial intelligence making fast inroads into human lives. A consumer electronics show in Las Vegas is the latest example of the same. From lifelike baby dolls to full-grown human-like robots are on the display. They not only write, cry, laugh, and blink, but some of them speak and react when you tell them something. The most interesting thing about these robots is their reactions, which are just like humans, seeming as if they are real people. The robot makers say soon people will not be scared of these human-faced machines being among them.
Humans are so complex, so making a robot exactly like a human is almost impossible. If we did that, then you wouldn't be scared of it, because you'd just assume it's a human. but you get that uncanny valley just before where it doesn't quite move like a human, doesn't quite express itself or emote or talk like a human. And that's the uncanny valley. That's the scary bit. If you go further back to something that looks less like a human, then suddenly you like it a lot more.
The robot makers hope that the way these robots are made would help even doctors how to treat and confront children, for instance. They also hope that by adding more human characteristics to these robots, the machines will be at the service of humans more than before. Let's see what's happening in one of the world's oldest festivals. It's called Black and White Carnival, celebrated every year in the Colombian city of Pasto. But it has a lot more than what its name may suggest. The carnival, full of vibrant colors and fun, livens up when people perform music too. Those in attendance even threw talcum powder and foam to add more doses of joy. More things to visit too. Colorful monuments and floats are brought to the streets. An artisan explains what's behind one of the huge sculptures exhibited there.
This commemorates what we are going through right now in the world. The virus, that little thing that brought COVID. We have skulls, people who died, those who are reborn, children, old people, and a lady. That's the whole motif. It's called rebirth.
The event has roots in Spanish and African traditions related to the indigenous people of Colombia. The carnival is aimed at highlighting the diversity of ethnic and cultural backgrounds. Its name symbolizes unity and equality. The festival continues until January the 10th. A zoo in the Netherlands is celebrating the birth of a newborn manatee, a rare event among the endangered species, especially within the confines of captivity. The newcomer was born in a Royal Burger Zoo in a Dutch city of Arnhem. Zookeepers say the birth went smoothly, adding that this is the mother's second calf. The newborn is still too young for keepers to be able to determine its gender, but handlers hope it will be a female. That's because there are only 15 females in European zoos. Manatees are closely related to elephants and are sometimes called sea cows because of their herbivorous diet. These gentle giants are listed as vulnerable to extinction mainly because of loss of habitat and collisions with boats. Shanghai is one of the most famous cities in the world, boasting an impressive number of tourist attractions. Now, the city is host to a new event that could draw excited visitors. The exhibition includes more than 100 items from Egypt, including 6 golden mummies. The most prized object on display is a 20-year-old female mummy with a gold mask and 2 jewels for eyes. Organizers have also put up for show original works by great European artists such as Raphael and Pablo Picasso.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Chinese astronauts on board the space station have held a unique conference with students, sending them a message that sky is the limit. They hope to inspire students to pursue their dreams and be proactive about their goals. Let's have a listen.
Every one of us went through rigorous selection and arduous training before carrying out space missions. Many people have to wait for several years, dozens of years, and even a whole life. But what deserves praise is that we have never given up, but remained true to our original aspiration, stood the loneliness, and passed the tests.
Ye, who is a first-time space traveler, also encouraged students to be brave in following their dreams. The Chinese astronauts talked about their life, work, and personal experiences. Students from Beijing, Hong Kong, and Macau were given the rare chance to ask their own questions during the Ground Space Conference. China launched Shenzhou 13 into space in October last year. The astronauts are scheduled to stay in orbit for 6 months, which will be the country's longest ever crewed mission.
The mobile public library is back in the Afghan capital, Kabul, to bring joy to children with exciting books and games. The library reaches hundreds of children on a daily basis, seeking to expand its coverage in the coming days. Rahmatullah Baghban has more.
As the sun rises in Kabul, the Charmagh's mobile library starts a fresh mission to delight children. The library goes from zone to zone in the capital, Kabul, to spread the joy and love of reading among the Afghan children. It operates in 5 buses and has a children-friendly space. The organizers say they are happy being back for Afghan children.
We want to enhance reading among children and boost their creative thinking. We have 5 mobile libraries operating across Kabul. Our services were shut for 3 months due to government change, but now they're happy that once again they can reach Kabul children. The library was sponsored by Afghan traders, but now it's out of funds and needs economic support.
I love my job here as a librarian. It's free for all. Children from different backgrounds come here to read books and play games. What I love most is watching children smiling and having fun with each other. I'm proud I can serve them with the skill I have.
Children are highly excited as they find the library right in front of their houses. Hundreds of children make daily use of initiative as most schools in Kabul lack libraries.
The mobile library used to come to our alley every week, but over the past 3 months, it didn't come and we missed it so much. We are very happy that it is bringing us joy again. Nowadays that our schools are closed, we can make use of its books.
We thank Charmagh for its services. We have learned to read stories, play games, and draw pictures. We have kind teachers and have a good time with our friends.
This creative reading campaign starts as the country faced many challenges, affecting children's schooling and taking reading opportunities from them. As schools remain closed for most Afghan children, such services can be a good haven for students and book lovers. The initiative can also encourage children and bring the reading to life. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
People in the northeastern Chinese province are trying to keep alive a winter tradition going back centuries. Each year, local fishermen and women in Jilin use an ancient technique to catch fish from Chagan Lake that is sealed with a thick layer of ice. What these locals do is they drill holes through the ice and put their nets under the holes to catch fish. But to pull out those nets from the lake, they will need help from a bunch of horses.
It was my first time seeing such a scene. 5 horses drawing a turntable to gradually pull the net up to the ice surface. I felt very novel to witness this.
The technique has been listed as a cultural heritage in China. The ceremony attracts a large number of local tourists during the fishing season, which lasts until the end of February. Albino animals are rare and very vulnerable, so when you find one, you need to make sure they get all the care they need to survive. And now, Colombian vets are doing all they can to help the very first case of an albino baby, Jaguarundi, that's been rescued there. Fire department volunteers rescued this female cub in the urban areas of the Abora Valley region. The vets are now giving it primary medical attention. The baby Jaguarundi will then be transferred to into a conservation park in the city of Medellin for more protection. A local expert explains why they cannot put back the animal into the wild.
At this point, this animal cannot be released to the wild due to its albino condition. It is predisposed to certain health disorders, certain disadvantages when performing in the wild. Therefore, the only alternative for it is to end his life in a park such as this.
Albino animals face many difficulties in the wild and struggle with basic survival skills. They do not have good eyesight, and due to their lack of pigmentation, they cannot camouflage. Therefore, just like endangered species, human monitoring would increase their chances of survival.
Swimming in sub-zero temperatures can be unimaginable for most people, but not for a group of athletes who've tested their skills and strength in Prague's Vltava River. 360 people from 8 countries gathered in the Czech Republic, in the Czech capital, to participate in an annual winter swimming event. The air temperature was minus 6 degrees Celsius, with water temperatures dipping to as low as 3 degrees. The event honors Alfred Nikodem, a Czech swimmer who braved the frigid waters in Prague for the first time in 1923, starting a tradition that has been kept alive ever since. Now the world's most powerful observatory is finally on its million-kilometer journey after several technical delays. The NASA telescope named James Webb blasted off into orbit on Saturday, heading to an outpost that's 1.5 million kilometers away from Earth. The observatory was in the making for some 3 decades and cost about $10 billion. It left Earth enclosed in a rocket and from a launch pad in South America. The journey will last a month. The telescope is the size of a tennis court. And if everything goes according to plan, it will enter service in June. Astronomers are hoping they can learn more about the origins of the universe once it starts beaming back new clues.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
In the limelight. A Georgia judge on Friday, 7th of January, sentenced both Travis McMichael, the man who fatally shot Ahmed Arbery, and his father, to life in prison without the possibility of parole, but issued a lesser sentence of life with the possibility of parole to the other white man convicted of murdering Mr. Arbery, a 25-year-old black man whom they had chased through their neighborhood. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Richard Fawcett. The piece is titled, Three Men Sentenced to Life in Prison in Arbery Killing. Georgia judge on Friday, 7th of January, sentenced both Travis McMichael, the man who fatally shot Ahmed Arbery, and his father, to life in prison without the possibility of parole, but issued a lesser sentence of life with the possibility of parole to the other white man convicted of murdering Mr. Arbery, a 25-year-old black man whom they had chased through their neighborhood. The three men, Travis McMichael, 35, his father Gregory McMichael, 66, and their neighbor, William Bryan, 52, were convicted of murder and other counts in state court in November, resulting in mandatory life sentences. The main question before Judge Timothy Walmsley on Friday was whether Mr. Arbery's murderers should be eligible for parole after 30 years, the earliest possible opportunity for such offenders under Georgia law. The lead prosecutor in the case, Linda Donikowski, asked the judge to deny the possibility of parole to the McMichaels, arguing that they had displayed a reckless history of vigilantism before the killing. She noted that the elder Mr. McMichael had used a disparaging term about Mr. Arbery as his body lay in the street and authorities responded. "There's been no remorse and certainly no empathy from either man," she said. She said that Mr. Bryan should be eligible for parole in part because he had cooperated with investigators. Before issuing the sentences, Judge Walmsley noted that Mr. Arbery had been chased for roughly 5 minutes while he ran from the men on foot. To illustrate the sense of time and to emphasize the terror that he said Ahmed Arbery must have felt, the judge paused and let silence fill the courtroom for 1 minute. Judge Timothy Walmsley said the case should prompt people to consider what it meant to be a good neighbor. "Assuming the worst in others, we show our worst character," he said. Judge Timothy Walmsley's decision in the same Brunswick, Georgia courtroom where the racially charged trial unfolded marked a dramatic moment in a saga that engulfed a small coastal community and then a nation. For weeks after the killing, the three men walked free as a prosecutor initially advised the police that they should not be arrested because they were covered by the state citizens' arrest law and because the shooting was a justified act of self-defense. The judge's decision on Friday, 7th of January, closed one important chapter in the case against the men who killed Ahmed Arbery, who had entered a house under construction in the suburban community of Satilla Shores on a Sunday afternoon in February of 2020. The three men pursued him in a pair of trucks, suspecting him of property crimes in the area. The chase ended when Ahmed Arbery, blocked in by the trucks, clashed physically with Travis McMichael, who shot Mr. Arbery three times at close range with a shotgun. Mr. Bryan captured the slaying on his cell phone camera, and then the footage was widely distributed online. It stirred national outrage. On Friday, 7th of January, Ahmed Arbery's family members gave a series of wrenching statements to the judge, arguing that the men should receive the maximum possible sentences under the law. Arbery's sister, Jasmine Arbery, said the men mistakenly deemed Mr. Arbery to be a dangerous criminal because of his dark skin and curly hair. Mr. Arbery was a jogging enthusiast, and his family has said that he had jogged into the neighborhood on the day of his death. Marcus Arbery Sr., his father, told the court, "Not only did they lynch my son in broad daylight, but they killed him whilst he was doing what he loved more than anything else, running." Wanda Cooper Jones, Ahmed Arbery's mother, noted that her son never spoke to his pursuers during the chase. "He never said a word to them, he never threatened them. He just wanted to be left alone," she said. "They were fully committed to their crimes. Let them be fully committed to their consequences." The case is likely to be appealed to the Georgia Supreme Court, but in an interview this week, Ms. Cooper Jones said she was bracing herself for the next trial in federal court